What up, Long Beach? Welcome back to our weekly podcast where we're updating you on everything happening with Long Beach schools, their sports teams, and our community at large. I'm JJ Fiddler, and joining me as always, Mike Arnabasio and Tyler Hendrickson.
We're going to stop saying the Zoomiverse. This is the last time you're going to hear us say that, because I don't like giving Zoom free advertising. So from now on, we're just going to say joining the podcast virtually are Mike Arnabasio and Tyler Hendrickson.
Right. The virtual pod using any methods necessary.
It could be anything.
Yeah. It could be anyone that chooses to pay us to mention that we're using their service. That's the point we're trying to get at.
Yeah, hey, it will always be recorded on Zoom. So
right.
Zoom. It'll be like the NFL where they have the Microsoft Surface tablet cover on an iPad.
They are listening. I know they're listening. So hit us up, Zoom. Smash that subscribe button.
Our thanks, as always, to the Long Beach Post for sponsoring What Up Long Beach and everything else we do at the562.org. Definitely go check out lbpost.com this week. I've got something like 7 education stories going up. A really action-packed Board of Education meeting coming Wednesday evening that there will be a lot of news coming out of. So our thanks, as always, to everyone at the Post.
The Post also has right now our newest 562 classic video. It's a look back on our road trip to the 2012 NCAA tournament in Portland, Oregon, where Long Beach State finally got a chance to dance with the Fab Four led by Casper Ware and the boys. Didn't go their way, but oh, what a trip it was, and a great video. That brings us to our special guest this week. It's going to be Dan Munson, head coach at Long Beach State. He's going to talk about that, how his family is dealing with his daughter getting COVID-19, and a bunch of other stuff. A really great interview with Dan Munson coming up. But Tyler, you and I went on that road trip, and rewatching that road trip video was nostalgic, to say the least.
Oh, it was definitely a trip down memory lane. I mean, you know, we talked about it in the previous pod about, you know, those trips that are always tough when they result in a loss. But sometimes the majesty of the moment and the spectacle is enough. And I think just anytime you get to go to the big dance and know, you know, you're in the presence of something that the whole country is watching, and you're in the room where it's happening, you know, I think it just, it takes it to a different level. And I'll never forget that feeling of walking in, and the buzz of being at the big dance is special. And if you're a sports fan, it's something that you got to find a way to be a part of, even though it was just the first rounds. I can't even imagine Sweet 16, Final Four.
We walked by Shaka Smart on our way to watching the first game of the day, which was Victor Oladipo leading the Indiana Hoosiers. So it was like, we just walked in and we're like, oh, we're here now.
Yeah, we in there.
Yeah, so that was a really fun video to do. Obviously, we do those a lot, so check that out at Long Beach Post. But we also have some really good news to give you from 562.org stories we've been doing this week. At the top for me has got to be the Crab Brothers. What they've been able to do at the AVP events hosted here in Long Beach over the last 3 weekends in the Elephant parking lot next to the Sports Arena. If you're driving down Shoreline, you may have seen the big black box over there in the parking lot, and that was the AVP events where the Crab Brothers, if you know about the AVP or Long Beach State men's volleyball, you know the Crab Brothers, Taylor and Trevor. Taylor, obviously, National Player of the Year at the beach, and then Trevor won the AVP last week. It was his first win with partner Triborn, and that's huge because really it's, if you know beach volleyball, Phil Dahlhauser and his partner at the top, and then it's the two Crab Brothers and their partners right below them. Two of those teams are going to represent the U.S. in the Olympics, if we ever have the Olympics again, and Trevor took a huge step by winning on Sunday, and he guaranteed it, guys. Classic Long Beach stuff. On Wednesday, he put it up on Instagram, more pressure, period. I guarantee bleeping T-A-W. I love that swag. I love that he delivered. I love that they asked him the question after, and he just smiled and said, just out here trying to make history. So really cool moment for the Crab Brothers. Obviously, we hope that sports are back and those boys get a chance to qualify for the Olympics.
I do have a good news story, but I just wanted to say nothing sums up the 2020 dystopia quite like building a beach volleyball pit in the parking lot across the street from the longest straightaway beach in America. That is exactly where we are, but it was nice seeing some AVP and knowing that it was local. My good news story is exactly that, just the feeling of being on the couch again. I wrote a column about it. This has been a dicey, difficult 4 to 5 months for all of us, mental health-wise, financially, employment status-wise, so many people we know that have been affected. And for me, it was just the simple joy of getting to watch Dodgers and Lakers games for the last couple of weeks with my son. It's nice to have 3 hours fly by. It doesn't feel like that's happened in several months. So it's been great for me. I know a lot of people are similarly feeling just looking at the ratings, which are like doubled for baseball and basketball. It's just so great to have that little sense of normalcy. Obviously still very weird, but great to have that back in our lives and on the television.
So what's Vinny's cognizant retention of sports at this point? You know, obviously he's watched a lot of sports with you on the job and on the couch. Yeah. But is he dialed in? Is he talking about different players doing different things?
He's taken a fairly astronomical – it's kids are interesting because when they're babies, they take these huge physical jumps forward. They go from – as you know, JJ, since you have 9,000 younger siblings, they go from like being lumps to being people overnight. And they go from being babies sort of trying to figure out what their legs are to running at like, you know, 30 miles an hour, it feels like, very quickly. And now as our kids are getting older, we're seeing those same jumps mentally. And man, the 3 months away from pro sports and away from playing sports, I kind of thought he would be sort of like, I don't know, whatever. But like he gets up, he's going into second grade, 7 years old. He gets up to mimic batting stances for the.
That's my guy.
It's awesome.
As they're coming up, huge Mookie Betts fan, huge Cody Bellinger fan, huge Clayton Kershaw fan, was talking about Clayton Kershaw's curveball.
Yes.
The first time he was watching it. So he knows the difference between fastball and changeup. Basketball wise, you know, I haven't really fed him very much info. So he just kind of knows who's good. You know what I mean? I wouldn't say
you can tell that by his play call, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. It's Braun to AD to Braun to AD to Braun to AD for a slam dunk.
For a dunk. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's basically what Frank Vogel does. So maybe Vinny could just take over that job.
Yeah. He's a player's coach for sure.
Just put up the triangle. Just put up the triangle. It worked for Phil. I'll piggyback. I got some good news. I want to piggyback on Mike's story about Ricky Tiedemann, a guy that we were expecting to potentially go very high in the draft, but this format was very wonky this year with only five rounds. It shuffled up a lot. We saw, you know, a lot of guys that were expected to go that didn't go. And so in Ricky's case, you know, after a bit of an injury, you know, his year at Lakewood, even though he impressed in his first couple starts, was going to go to San Diego State, but instead we'll go to LBCC to prepare for the draft. And maybe it's selfish by me to be excited to have that guy so close to home and still on our coverage map that we can watch him pitch for the Vikings, assuming that everything goes smoothly into plan.
I'm dropping that disclaimer from now on.
I'm sorry. I just
21.
I'm panicked. I don't know. I'm panicked. But the Tiedemann family, a great family. Obviously, Ty, Polly quarterback, who is now in the Rangers organization as a pitcher as well. So, you know, to be able to enjoy more of that, and we lost Ricky's senior year at Lakewood, but hey, we've got an extra year at LBCC. So that's maybe a bit selfish for us, but we think it's a good decision for Ricky, and hopefully he can have a great year and then get paid and make his way up to the show.
Right. It's selfish for us, but it is also the right decision because just for those who don't understand the intricacies of the draft, had he gone to San Diego State, he'd be draft ineligible for 3 years. So that's why, you know, the price went up on San Diego State a little bit. But if he goes to LBCC and puts out one great year, he's eligible to be drafted next year, which, you know, if you look at the kid's stats, you know, he said he's just been on Ty's program with him basically. And his Milo's up 2 or 3 miles an hour. He's hitting 95 as sort of his baseline on his fastball at this point. And so you can see why everyone's excited about him. And he knows there'll be 30 scouts at every game he pitches at LBCC, or there would have been 30 scouts at every game he pitched for San Diego State. And he figured he'd go to the junior college. So like Tyler said, you know, he'd get drafted next year. And I've been to the Tiedemann household, by the way. It is literally, you could sprint from the Tiedemann household to the LBCC baseball field in 2 minutes if you needed to. Like, they're right around the corner. So it's a total no-brainer for him.
Maybe you could.
Tyler might need 2.5 minutes. I don't know.
Hey, come on.
We actually had an incredible interview with those guys, Ty and Ricky, on this very show a couple months ago. So make sure you check out that, or just, you know, subscribe to the show. Wherever you're listening to this, go hit that subscribe button so it just downloads to your phone automatically so you don't miss a thing. And speaking of subscriptions, go ahead and do that at the 562.org and Long Beach Post as well. Because Tyler, it's Tyler Get Money Hendrickson this month. You have done a great job building up our base, man.
Get money. Yeah, we got to thank the Long Beach community, obviously. I mean, we can't do what we do without the support from the community. You may have seen on our social media channels that we ran a big GoFundMe fundraiser in July. It was very successful. It took us only a week to reach our goal, and we brought in over $2,700 from 65 different donors. So thank you to everyone who contributed, who retweeted, who shared that. That's the way a nonprofit stays in business, right? Is because the community wants to, you know, keep this around and make sure that they can stay informed on important issues regarding sports, education, and all the other stuff that we bring you at the 562.org. In August, we'll be pushing for more Patreon subscribers, which not only, you know, help create a baseline for us to know, hey, we have this many readers that are loyal and support us, and also help us provide the content for free. So go to the 562.org. There's a big banner that says subscribe. Click on that, takes you to the Patreon. Sign up for whatever you can. A dollar a month is helpful. We need more people involved and engaged and, you know, proving that, hey, they want Long Beach sports coverage, and we're here to give it to you.
Obviously, everything we do at the 562.org, also sponsored by Naples Rib Company, our longtime sponsors for more than a decade. They're going strong. We're going strong with them. Thank you so much to Dave Rossini and everyone at Naples Rib Company. It is still time for the community to support a restaurant that has supported the community. They are now open for outdoor dining as well as takeout. They have full dinner and bar menus open 5 p.m. Wednesday through Sunday. They do have two TVs outside so you can watch sporting events, and they've got all of the happy hour specials. You can visit their Instagram or Facebook or go to ribcompany.com for more information. And obviously, if you're like my wife and I, you're not quite ready to be out doing outdoor restaurant stuff yet. They're still doing the takeout options, which we will be partaking of tomorrow evening. So definitely make sure you're supporting Naples Rib Company, because we got to make sure that places like Naples Rib Company get through this crazy, crazy time we're all living in.
We now bring on our special guest for the week, the winningest men's basketball coach all time at Long Beach State, Dan Munson. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time. How you doing?
It's just great to be out and doing something. So it's as close as I get to work, and I'm thanks for having me. Everybody says that as a cliche, but I mean it.
Now, question number one, I mean, how sick are you at Zoom calls? Like, JJ and I we've been friends for half our lives. We're used to seeing each other six times a week. And this is the only way we interact with anyone at this point, is just on the computer, you know?
You know, I would like to say I'm sick of them, but sometimes, you know, I'm looking forward to them too, because it's a double-edged sword. If you don't have this, what do you have, you know? So, I'm sick of them, in the fact that the people that I'm having them with, usually I would love to, you know, high five them or hug them or whatever. But on the other hand, it's better than sitting by yourself in quarantine, which I've done, you know, some in this thing, thinking, you know, my family wants in the transfer portal. They want away from me. What, my wife is social distancing me. What are we doing here?
Yeah, you actually just got off a conference call with the other Big West basketball coaches. Is that Zoom as well? Do you get to see Russ Turner's face?
I do. He looks as grumpy on a Zoom as he does on the sidelines. I'm okay with Zooming him. He scares me. So no, he doesn't. And he doesn't scare me at all. He pisses me off more than scares me. So I don't want that out there.
A lot of Beach Athletic fans feel you on that one, Coach.
Do you and Russ like yell about the Wi-Fi connection the way you guys yell at refs? Like, do you have to find a place to let that energy out?
You know, what's interesting about Russ is, you know, we are actually pretty good friends off the court, you know, because we have mutual respect for each other, the jobs we do. And he actually called me right after the coaches meeting for a little rant. And then he ends it with, hey, can you come golfing next week? Can we get out? You know, so, you know, you'd hate to say you're ever, friends of somebody that is such a rival as that, but, I think we're mutual respect friends with each other. I'd say that.
Your friend.
And he's really fun to be on the golf course as much as on the court. So, you know, it's as competitive there as anywhere.
I was going to say, you probably have some great rounds together. Are you guys handling business on those conference calls? I mean, when Mike and I get together and we're talking business, it's kind of a holding pattern on everything. Are you feeling the same way with the conference?
Yeah, especially it was the first one with a new commissioner. And so it was more of a introduction and, you know, he had some initial thoughts of our conference and how he could help us, and then had us go around and kind of the state of our situation with the COVID, where we're at with our players, where, you know, where we're at with our schedules, that kind of thing. So he was just kind of trying to get a feel for, you know, what he's up for, and he's up for a big task because the Big West needs, you know, needs a jolt, and hopefully he can give us that.
Well, speaking of COVID, I mean, we have to check in. How is your family doing? We know that your daughter contracted the virus, but she's doing better now, right?
She really is. And I think, you know, people were, oh, it was in the paper and that's private and everything, but it really isn't. We are kind of a PSA for, you know, and when you have a job that, you know, you're fortunate enough to be in the public, you know, you know, the public deserves to be educated. And that's certainly what it did for our family. And because I think my wife was as strict to the CDC guidelines as any family could be, and felt like with four kids, we had, you know, for months and months done the right thing. But you know, a senior in high school, 18 years old, Molly wore us down as parents. And, you know, she, you know, went a couple places. We're not sure, you know, none of her friends got it. But I think the biggest thing that I can tell people is, you know, having gone through it, is it's real. You know, I think people think that it's, you know, it's not going to happen to them, or it's not going to happen to somebody that's at that age, or all these false things out there. But, you know, as a parent, she's 18, probably the fittest of any of the six of us that were in quarantine. She'd get up at 6 a.m. You know, she signed a rowing scholarship at Gonzaga, you know, and it's going there in the fall. And, you know, was in very good shape. And that's what I told my players, you know, for most people that are in shape and most people that are 18, but are you going to take that chance? Cause you know, she took that chance and lost. I mean, she was, for 72 hours there, we didn't know, you know, I mean, she was in, you know, urgent care one day, in the emergency room for 6 hours the next night after that. And, and didn't hit the ventilator, but the pneumonia she contracted was lethal. I mean, my wife got up in the middle of the night because she heard her, and she was crawling to the bathroom, trying to get to the bathroom. She couldn't get there, you know. And, you know, you look at your 18-year-old daughter that was, you know, in such good shape, you know, 6-8 days before that, you know, never left her bedroom for 8 days. So anyway, I'm giving that all that out because I just think it's important for people to realize that, you know, we all have to stay safe and healthy. And unfortunately, my family is right now, but, and I appreciate you asking because, you know, I want as many people to know that, you know, we all have to, you know that we're all susceptible to it, no matter your age, your health, your conditions. And we all have to do our best to try to keep each other safe by staying away from each other.
First of all, you know, thank you for sharing, because I completely agree with you about the importance of getting that message to, you know, our audience tends to be younger. People your age, people our age, I think largely, you know, you have friends, you're more likely to have friends who've had it. You see people our age taking it more seriously. And, you know, I have to tell you, I go on our Instagram, you know, which is a lot of kids that we covered in high school over the last 10 years, kids we covered in college. So these are people in their 20s and they're at apartment parties, you know, 20 deep with, you know, no mask, just sort of living their lives. And, you know, I'm sure you remember, I know JJ and I remember being in our 20s. I mean, we did lots of stupid, unhealthy things, you know, I mean, becoming sports writers on that list. But I think it is important to get that message out there. And I guess my question for you is, did you see some light bulbs turn on with your team? You know, when you're sharing a story that's as personal, and they obviously know your family, most of them probably been to your house, did you feel like that kind of got through to them in maybe a different way than just the emails and stuff they're getting from the university of?
Well, that's why I told them, and that's why I'm telling, you know, because of it. Did a light bulb go on all of them? No. You know, I mean, again, that's the age where we're all invincible. And my daughter was invincible. She still was wearing a mask. She still didn't go in anybody's house. You know, we still don't know how she got it. You know, none of her friends tested positive or had any symptoms, you know, or anybody that she was around. And, you know, we contacted 40 or 50 people, you know, and she actually had a test on the 6th of July that was negative, and she could have gotten it there at the urgent care at that point, because she started getting symptoms 2 or 3 days later. So, you know, you just don't know. And with my team, you know, I got to be honest, I worry, because, you know, they're bored, and we're our society is very, this is a very difficult thing for our society to handle, because we're all, I don't want to say everybody's selfish, but everybody's really self-motivated to do what they need to do, you know, to still work out, to still see people, to still, and, you know, a senior in high school wore two parents down that were very diligent about this, you know, and that, you know, she didn't get a signing day. She didn't get prom. She was scheduled to speak at graduation. She didn't get to do that. So, you know, to say goodbye to a couple friends that are going to college one night, or to go to somebody's backyard and on the 4th of July, you know, little things that you think as a parent, well, you know, she deserves to do that, and she does, but yet does she deserve to bring home a virus to her grandparents or whatever? You know, it's just, it's very complicated. And that's what you ask what we're doing, and I'm, you know, as a team, I continue to educate them on this and everything you can through Zoom and through stories and everything. But again, until it hits home, it, you know, we didn't think that Molly was in any jeopardy. We knew her grandparents were, you know, if she brought it home to them. But, you know, we're at a different state right now. And if I can just get some of my players to understand that, you know, and trend towards all of them, but we're going to try to bring them back here in like the dorms around the 19th of August and the ones in apartments around the 21st, and try to quarantine them again. You know, they've been doing that hopefully at home, and just try to get back to campus a little bit, even though they're going to be online, and see if we can get going. Hopefully they can hold each other accountable, because I think that's the other thing too. You know, what do they say? Idle time is the devil's workshop. And, you know, there's just so much downtime for everybody. And for me, it's hard. And I'm 57 years old. Well, for a 20-year-old, you know, downtime is just like, I mean, I watch my other kids, you know, and yet my other three kids were the ones that were healthy and had to not leave the house for 14 days after she brought it back. So, you know, it really is a complicated societal issue of you know, being selfless. As you can see, as a country, we're not doing very good at it.
Yeah, I think I'd close with this, and then we'll look forward to getting to talk some hoops. You said it exactly, and we've written a couple features about families who've had this virus get in through the front door in one way or another. And one of those families, you know, the husband, it's a husband, a wife, and two kids. He was on a ventilator. You know, he was gone for 2 months. He didn't get to see his kids. And his wife, who's the vice principal at Cabrillo, I thought put it perfectly, because you're exactly right. It's not fair to anybody. I mean, it's not fair to the parents who don't know what to do with their kids, who have to go back to work, but the kids are still going to be home. It's not fair to the teachers who are being used as sort of a political football right now about do they have to go back to work or not. And the way that Stacey Alexander, the mom in this family, put it was, you know, she's like, everyone's right. I mean, it's horrible. It's unimaginable for everyone. And that's it. You know, there isn't a, and, you know, but there, it's just, yes, it's not fair for the high school seniors who, as you know, we cover, we're close with a lot of those kids. It's not fair for the parents. It's not fair for the teachers. It's just something that happened to us as though it was a meteor hitting the planet. And all we can do is the best thing we can do and try and figure it out, you know?
She put it exactly right. And then it becomes, you know, how are you going to handle it? Because it's not fair. So now how are we all going to handle it? And I think my team's handling it well. So as we transition into there, I think they're, you know, we didn't put anybody in summer school that unless they needed it, you know, for graduation or eligibility. One of the things is they, you know, the pyramid's been closed and they've stayed away, but they've kind of been all on their own. So the Zoom calls and the checking in, you know, some of them have it better than others. It's not fair, you know. I mean, the conference call in the Big West, we just went around the room and it's not fair. Some programs have all their guys together right now. Some have none, some have a few, you know. And I think we live in this society where we think everything should be fair. And especially in athletics, you know, you're always fighting for a fair playing field, and we have to, the new normal is, at least for this year, it's not going to be fair. And so we all have to, whoever deals with it, I tell my players, you can only control what you can control, and that's your attitude and your effort. And right now, you know, we have to come out of this, you know, and have the best season possible. And teams are going to, you know, it's not fair. So some people are going to handle it better than others, and we need to handle it the best in the Big West.
After the Big West announcement last week about postponing the fall sports but not deciding on basketball yet, I was talking to Andy Fee, and he was saying that, interestingly enough, basketball could be the first group back on campus, back playing again, before the fall actually gets back to practicing and then getting into their schedule starting in 2021. So right now, best case scenario, as you already mentioned, you're kind of going to try to create a little bit of a beach bubble, bring these kids back on campus. Some of them are staying in local apartment buildings, but staying together, roommates or lift partners and workout partners, stuff like that. So what is your plan for those practices? Once you get the guys back together, they quarantine for a little bit, you know, what are you working on in those practices? Is it different from stuff you've done before because of the situation?
Well, yeah, it's going to be different, but we don't know the plan. You know, that's the whole fluidity of this thing, you know, and we, what a responsibility, as I tell my players, we're going to probably be the first ones. And if we screw it up and we can't stay, you know, we have a bunch of positive tests. I mean, that's not even screwing it up. If that could happen, and we'll do all the right things too. So I shouldn't say screw it up, but we have a responsibility for all the other sports, you know, to try to do the best we can to get this back up and running. But our practices are going to be, again, dictated by not the coaches, not the players, but the state of California, the county of Los Angeles, Cal State University, the Cal State system. We're going to be dictated, and they're in the process. We did a rough draft of maybe six stages, and start with our strength person in the grass for a week or two to see, you know, how that goes, to moving into the pyramid with each person having their own ball to their own basket, to stage three, to another state, you know. And so we're just going to comply. You know, I one of the things I was talking to JJ about the other day was, you know, with chemistry and not being around them, what are you telling your players? And I'm telling them, this is good for us. You know, I got it. Last year at this time, we were going to Costa Rica, and we were all together, and we were singing Kumbaya every day, and we were having our best practices, and we played our best basketball in Costa Rica, and we were all so excited, and everybody was getting along great. And then we had the year we had, you know. So this year we're going to do just the opposite, you know. We're gonna come back more appreciative of each other and grateful for the opportunities we have, and just be, you know, like kids at Christmas, to be back together and motivate our way that way, you know, because that's what the hand we're dealt. And it's got to be, we got to use that to the best of our ability.
It feels like about 15 years ago we were talking to you about Costa Rica. I can't believe that was last summer.
Yeah, and it was awesome. And I wouldn't, you know, I say it didn't work out. It certainly, it was a great cultural experience for these, because certainly if these athletes leave after 4 years and all I've given them is basketball, then I haven't done a good job, or my job, and that cultural experience for me and my family was tremendous, let alone for them. Hopefully, you know, I think they still talk about it and we still talk about it. So I'm not degrading that, but it didn't work the way we envisioned the season to go. So now we're just going to flip the tables and do the exact opposite, and hopefully this will work.
You've also got some great talent coming in. We've written already about guys like Isaiah Washington, transfers. Obviously, the transfer situation this year has been completely different. You talked to us about how you can't do the campus visits. You can't show the kids the facilities and stuff like that. It's really up to them to trust the people that you mutually know. But Isaiah Washington, man, what a get for you guys. He is an X factor for sure at guard.
Yeah, we're really excited. And yeah, I've never shook his hand. never been in the same room as Isaiah, you know. but we're excited to Zoom him, you know. He's on an academic Zoom call right now as we speak with our academic people and Coach Scholl. So the times are changing without COVID, you know. They're changing with the fluidity, which is a new word of the pandemic, you know, without the pandemic. Recruiting has gone to transferring. It's not a free agent market right now, but it's about as close as you can get to it. And I think a year from now, it probably will be very much a free agent market. So we've had to adjust to that as coaches and as a program. And Raymond Hawkins and Isaiah Washington are two people we feel that we won in that market as far as guys that can come in and help a team that's got a majority of its players back and yet needed a boost. And hopefully those two guys can get immediately eligible and give us that boost.
Well, we've got an easy transition here. So Isaiah Washington from New York, one of the guys that talked to him about coming to Long Beach State was one of your former players, Edis Dvorsevich, who was on the 2012 team that went to the NCAA tournament. Mike, Tyler, and myself just recorded one of our 562 Classic videos of that tournament trip, including our road trip. Edis's and one in the second half, one of my favorite moments of that game. What do you remember from that trip, that season, that whole thing? Because it was the last chance to dance, and I think the entire city was behind you.
Well, first of all, before we go to that, you brought up Edis, and Edis certainly was somebody that Isaiah was in the same AAU program and trusted Edis in his recommendation about coming to Long Beach State. And so you wrote something here a week or two ago about, you know, that, and gave Edis a little bit of pub in there and said that he and I butted heads quite a bit in those 2 years, and yet that Edis gave the thumbs up to come. So I forwarded that on to Edis, nothing else, but just forwarded your little article on Isaiah to him. And it's not, I don't know how long it took him to read it, 2 minutes, and the phone rings, Edis calls, and he doesn't say hello or anything. He says, you make sure you tell JJ I got you two league championships while I was there butting heads, okay? He needs to know.
Yes, Edis. Yes, the Big Apple, dude. We love that guy.
And
that's a big head to butt heads with there too, Coach.
but again, as we say that Isaiah hopefully is an X factor for this team. Edis was certainly an X factor for that team. You know, I don't know how many points he averaged. I know he didn't start. I know some games he didn't play much. During the recruitment of Isaiah, he relived every moment of that tournament game with me. The thing we both regret, I've always said that he said, I know what you were doing with Larry and you had to do it that way, but I didn't, you know. Larry was, had a serious a knee hyperextension and really wanted to play, deserved to play, but hadn't really practiced. And so I threw him in there, and those 10 minutes or so, he just wasn't comfortable. And we just didn't get the traction we needed at that time. Even like with Tim Adio and some of these since that, I've always told kids, I had a game where I've always regretted either you're practicing and you're playing or you're not. There's no, we're going to try it. And with Larry, we tried his knee that game. And like Edis said, Larry didn't play in the Big West tournament, and he was defensive player of the year in the league. He was a first team all league player, but we went through that because Papa George and Edis were in a good flow, and those six really took up the slack and had a good flow. And I think if we would have either played with those six or Larry would have just played and not tried it, we would have won that game. And that's as a coach, that's what you look back thinking about, is how the ifs and buts and candies and nuts of, you know, what could have been, because I think you think we had a better team than New Mexico that year.
You also improved over those 4 years. You know, obviously the Fab Four coming in, Cass, Larry, TJ, and Eugene, and then they start all four, get there the last time. But guys like Edis, Caffey, Ennis, James Ennis, now an NBA, are in the bubble. Those guys really brought some swag to that team. Yeah. I remember so vividly, before the first game of the Big West tournament that year, you guys are coming in from the corner tunnel, and Edis throws the curtain open and yells, "The boys are here!" Now, none in the Fab Four would have ever done that, right? None of those guys have that personality, but Edis brought that personality, and from somebody who had watched you a lot over those 4 years, it almost like picked your game up to another level.
It really did. He was huge that way. Obviously, talent-wise, Ennis and Caffey coming in that year as new players were huge. But Jeff Kamen says it the best, because he was an assistant women's coach at the time. And he always says, you know, your guys would always come by and try to talk smack, you know, in my office, and I'd just send them away, you know. They just couldn't handle it, you know. And he said, all of a sudden, Edis comes in, and they're going toe-to-toe with me in the office. They ain't leaving like they used to, you know. And he said, you know, he really did bring that. And I it's hard to put a finger on last year's team because there were so many good things about it, but it was missing an X factor. It was missing some of that swagger a little bit. Or realistic swagger per se, but you know, I'm anxious to get this new group together because every group is different, like you said, and everybody looks back at those quote unquote glory days, at least in my tenure here, those 4 years with those guys. But the first three were rocky roads too, you know, to get to that fourth year. You know, we won our share of games, but we underachieved in the fact that, you know, we win the league and not win the tournament, or stumbled down the stretch, or, you know, there was some, 1 year we had a really good preseason. I think their Cass's sophomore year, and everybody thought, you know, we were heading to and lost like the first three or four league games, thinking that it was going to be easy, you know, guys' minds not being right. So every team is a different adventure in a different way, but it's great to look back to that 2012 team, because they put it all together for a long period of time there.
Indeed they did. We just mentioned him, James Ennis. He's in the bubble with the Magic. You talking to him? How's he doing out there? Is he surviving in the NBA bubble?
Well, I know James is bored because he's been texting me. That's how I know he's got nothing better. He texts me during my Zoom call with the Big West coaches. Hey, coach, how's the family doing? So we have a little bit of a connect in the COVID, in that he contacted at about the same time Molly did. And so he keeps checking in on her and the family. His whole family except his daughter got it. So, you know, it was serious for him and his family too. But the other day, in his boredom in the bubble, he texts me with I got a serious question for you, coach. I'm like, what's that? He says, when are you going to retire my jersey? And I said to him, I said, James, well, when are you going to retire? It's hard to retire a jersey if it's still playing. You know, I said, who, you know, it's like, you know, you gotta give up your career and retire before we can retire you. So that's a good point. So
yeah, I think it took Brian Russell about 20 years post-retirement to get his,
yeah,
you know, so it is what it is.
He started laughing. He gave it the LOL. He said, I didn't think of it that way. So, you know, but he's had plenty of time in that bubble, but I was, before we came on the air, I was mentioning, you know, maybe we can get it out to on YouTube or whatever. But there was a great interview that Peter Papageorge, who was huge in that tournament run when Larry went down, and they filled in for him, and so did Caffey. But Peter was interviewing him, and he's not obviously a professional like you guys, interviewer. And it wasn't more of an interview of two just old 2012 teammates catching up, and it was really priceless as a coach, and a proud moment just to see how good they're both doing, and how much, you know, as I tell my players, you don't all have to like each other, but you have to love each other, and just the love they had for each other.
Absolutely, great point. Last thing for me, are you watching NBA basketball, or are you enjoying the bubble ball that we've been watching? Not a lot of defense, but some pretty great offense.
Well, my kids will tell you, you know, and Omar, my manager, that a lot of you guys know, who's a huge Laker fan, will tell you, I'm not a huge NBA guy. It's, you know, it's just a different game than the college game, and I will come home every night and watch North Carolina Duke before I'll watch, you know, a Laker game. But you can only watch these reruns of the North Carolina Duke so many times. So I got to admit, I have, in the quarantine, I have become a watcher of the NBA, especially when the Orlando Magic are playing, or, you know, the Lakers or Clippers, you know, or you know, the local teams or players that I know. But, yeah, I've enjoyed, you know, it's just, I'm human. I'm looking for content. I'm looking for live sports. I've watched more live golf than I've watched in probably ever. And, you know, even I've become way more of a Dodger fan, you know,
there you go.
DirecTV's got it now, and so I'm like everybody else, you know, trying to stay safe, is trying to watch some of this stuff on, and the bubble has been fun to watch, especially offensively. The defense is still yet to, you know, kind of pick up, but offensively these guys are very gifted.
Anthony Davis is playing great defense, and end of list. Yeah. Well, diehard NBA fan Dan Munson, thanks so much for coming on. Glad to hear that the family's doing better, and we wish you guys all the best of luck just figuring out, like you said, the fluidity of what practice and the schedule and everything else is going to look like. We'll be here to cover you guys trying to figure it out, but wishing you guys the best.
Appreciate you guys still up and running, and everybody stay safe and healthy.
That's it. That's all. There ain't no more. Another episode of What Up Long Beach being put into the books. Thanks again to Dan Munson for stopping by. What a great interview that was. You can read more about Long Beach State and the Big West and all those decisions at the562.org, obviously. Now we get to our final segment, the speech and debate segment. We're going to talk and debate about something. And I think this week it's good to do some streaming service talk. You know, we're all kind of stuck inside. We've gone through the stuff we want to watch. We've gone through the stuff we said we would watch eventually. And now we're watching stuff we never thought we'd ever watch. Got to be honest with you. I woke up this morning and my wife was watching reruns of The Simple Life starring Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie. That is not a joke. That really just happens.
No comment. We're
running out of stuff, Mike. We're running out of stuff.
I'm with you 100%. The debate topic is, I don't know if you guys saw the news that Disney Plus hit 60 million subscribers today. That was something they were planning on doing by 2024. So now, I think what we've all known is there's going to be like three or four services that make it, right? Everyone's launching a service. But Netflix has 160 million. Netflix is clearly in the tournament, right? Like, they punched their ticket. Amazon Prime, because people sign up for the Prime service, has like 100 million. Who knows how many they do as their own streaming thing, but that's not how they went. So Amazon's in. Disney Plus is now way out in front of the rest of the pack at 60 million. And behind them is Hulu at like 35 million, HBO Max, Peacock, Quibi, CBS All Access. You guys know, obviously, you've seen a million. So here's my speech and debate topic for you is, you only have 10 extra dollars a month, whatever it is. You can only pick one streaming service and you have to be locked into it for 2 years. What would you pick?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because as soon as you talk about Disney, when Disney first offered their deal, I got it for my niece, Evelyn, who lives in Virginia with my sister, because I get to see what she watches because it's also on my phone. So then when we talk on the phone, I'm able to look at, you know what I mean? And be like, oh, you were watching this Mickey Mouse or whatever.
Right, and then
we can talk about something. So I don't know. It would be hard for me to give that up. But I think Netflix for me would be top, because I just love the documentaries. The Netflix documentaries are so good. And they do actually produce some pretty decent original content when it comes to movie stuff. Like there's a... I think it's a Jamie Foxx movie coming out pretty soon. That's supposed to be pretty good. So yeah, I'm excited for that stuff. And I think Netflix is the only place where I get excited for new streaming content, because most of the streaming content I'm watching is stuff I've either watched before or had been on my list to watch when, you know, the world shut down.
Netflix has like five shows that are better than the next best show from any of the other streaming services' original content, in my opinion.
Now that Handmaid's Tale is done, I would totally agree.
Right. And like, I like Castle Rock and some of the other stuff they've had on Hulu. And we enjoyed, there's a couple shows we watch on Prime as well. But like, at the end of the day, I mean, it's, yeah, Netflix, I think, is just sort of dumping on everyone. I'm going to take a different tack.
Hold on. Season two of Mindhunter. If you don't believe what Mike just said or you disagree,
We haven't even watched Mindhunter.
Go watch season two of Mindhunter, bro. It is peak television. It's also
probably on watch season one first, though. But yeah,
I don't even think you have to, honestly.
Whoa.
I'm going to take a different tact, and I'm going to go with HBO Max, because there's a couple of the all-time great HBO shows that we haven't watched. And so having those to spread out over a big period of time would be great. But HBO also, I have to admit, of the shows that will be new shows, we love Succession. We're diving into Watchmen right now. But like, HBO is a company who I would say, even more than Netflix, I trust that if they put something out with their logo on it, it's always going to have been worth my time, even if it's not my favorite thing in the world. So I'd go HBO Max.
Did you watch Insecure, Mike?
Yeah, yeah, love Insecure. And so, like, Insecure is a great Insecure, Euphoria. Like,
that's the first. That's the first example I thought of. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I think it's a great. I mean, HBO Max is like the best quality. I mean, HBO continues to make the best television out there.
It's not TV, Tyler.
HBO Max is in like
exactly
ninth, is in like ninth place. By the way, there's more people on Peacock than there are on HBO Max.
Wow,
but HBO Max is 15 a month rather than 10. But and I think it's a that's HBO a great model. Example of 100%. And it's the quality versus quantity. Netflix is going to give you so much quantity, and I think especially in the times that we're living in, where we're at home so often and need so many shows, Netflix is giving you like the original movies and shows, as well as a bunch of old stuff, a huge catalog. So I think the answer has to be Netflix for now, especially since I've already seen so many of those great old HBO shows already, some multiple times. So yeah, I mean, Netflix just for the scope, I think, more than anything. But they've been in the game the longest, so they should have the biggest library.
But they're
in their interfaces.
They were the first people who got it. They were the first people who got it.
But they're still doing new, right? New old is also a thing. Like,
they're 5 years ahead of everyone else.
They brought Supermarket Sweep back this month, you guys. Supermarket bleeping sweep. I cannot tell you how enjoyable it is to watch a game show where no one's trying to beat each other or use, like, you know, cannery or whatever. They're just out there having fun shopping. I love that show.
But they're also they had a full vision, right, of what they were going to do, and they are now the biggest, like, they're like NBC and they're like NBC and Paramount Pictures in 1995 all in one company, because they're also the only one of those services we just mentioned where a lot of them have original kids content. They have cartoons for kids or whatever, but Netflix has, you know, like The Floor Is Lava is something that all four people in my family watched together and enjoyed. There's nothing like that on Hulu or HBO Max.
Yeah.
Like, it's either kids programming or it's adult programming. And it's none of what we grew up on, which is like Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune, stuff that you can watch with your whole family, even if your grandparents are over or whatever. And I think Netflix is just like, they're just doing everything.
And people know what Netflix is. You cannot say the same for Quibi. So...
This is very true. This is. I tried to explain to somebody what Plex was, and they were like, "Just stop it." I also like that we started this podcast by saying we weren't going to give people free advertising, and then just basically waxed Netflix's balls for 10 minutes.
Hey man,
they need the money. They're the only company in America that's making a profit right now. They really need our plug. You know, Netflix, you owe us a plug. You owe us a plug for the 562.org.
Give us a show.
Ooh, I like that. The 562.org, the show. All right, you guys, we got to get out of here. Get back to work. Putting up stories at the 562.org and Long Beach Post as always. So please visit those websites. As we mentioned at the top of the show, they need your community support as well. So spread the word, subscribe, be a reader, be a lover of Long Beach like we all are. So for Mike and Tyler and JJ, everybody else at those websites who help keep you informed, we will see you soon, Long Beach. Stay strong.